Verse 44, he sold all he had. Verse 46, he went away and sold everything he had. To many people today, that is unthinkable. The idea that we might give something up in order to follow Jesus, it is madness. The idea that we might give up everything in order to follow Jesus, well, that's just insanity. Many people today are glad to come to church. Come along on a Sunday, maybe even take some responsibilities and make themselves helpful. Maybe even give some money to support the work of the church. But only for as long as it's convenient. We don't come if there's a children's party, or if origami club starts to run on a Sunday morning. We're glad to give money, but out of what's left when we've done everything that's more important to us. The idea that we might give something up in order to follow Jesus, it's madness. The idea that we might give up everything we have in order to follow Jesus, well, that's just insanity. If someone followed Jesus in the costly way pictured by these parables, they would be branded a fundamentalist, a fanatic, a bit over the top. And quite apart from anything else, most of us here are English. So we just don't do exuberance. It's embarrassing. These words of Jesus are not easy to listen to in our day and age. Now sure, we could just listen to them on the surface. Just a couple of charming stories. Which child does not love stories about discovering buried treasure? And most adults are equally excited by such a prospect. If you're a parent and you've been digging a deep hole on the beach with your children on holiday, is there not a tiny bit of you that just hopes your spade might hit something as you dig, even though you know it's not going to happen? And how charming to hear about a pearl merchant who spent his life looking for quality pearls, and then one day he gets the lucky break that he's more than worked for. You can listen to all of Jesus' parables like that if you want. We thought about that a few weeks ago. Parables filter the listeners. Many just hear them as stories, as entertainment for the ear, but they make no dent on a person's life. Parables invite us to scratch below the surface, to think a little bit more deeply, to dig out what Jesus is really saying. And when we do that with these stories, we find that they're not just stories about someone who's found something immensely valuable, although they are that. They are stories about two people who were willing to give up everything. Give up everything to have that treasure chest. Give up everything for that pearl of great value. And once you see that that's what's going on, the men in these parables are frankly embarrassing. The demands that Jesus is making are unreasonable. The parables themselves are unbearable to think about too hard. So we are tempted to ignore these parables. Treat them as mere stories. But we can't do that because we're Christians. So the other option available to us this morning would be for me to berate you with them, to beat you over the head. I could insist that what we need is a stiff upper lip. We need to be willing to pay the cost, to make the sacrifice, to do our bit for Jesus and his kingdom. I could show you pictures of Lord Kitchener. I could give a stirring speech like a general on the eve of battle to strengthen our spines, brace ourselves, and to follow Jesus whatever it costs. But that won't do either. There's a big problem with that. Do you imagine that the man who found the treasure needed a stiff talking to? That there he was, about to run away because the field would cost too much, until along came a friend, a retired sergeant major as it happened, who talked to him about being a man and paying the price. Hardly. He couldn't get to the bank fast enough. The same with the pearl merchant. Nobody had to tell him to put his chin up and brave the bill. This was the moment he had been working for, waiting for all his life, and never quite dreamt would come. There was a thing on the news this week about people who go looking for diamonds in rivers and in silt and that kind of thing. And that came because they've discovered a new diamond in, I think it was Sierra Leone, which would be now the 12th largest diamond in the world. The value of it, not yet known, because it perfections are what matters, not just size. But someone had discovered this very, very rare find, this diamond. Now, I can assure you, the person who found that, they're not having to do any calculations at all about whether the effort of finding it was worth it. They're just overjoyed that they found it. Now, Jesus does indeed lay out a high price for those who would follow him. Verse 44, he sold all he had. Verse 46, he went away and sold everything he had. We mustn't pretend those sentences aren't there. But neither must we beat ourselves up with them. Instead, as always, let's look more closely. And I want us to notice two details in the way Jesus tells these parables that point us to these stories actually being unbelievably good news. First is the ambiguity about the cast in the story. Ask this question: who is the man who discovered the treasure in the field? Who is the merchant looking for fine pearls? So far we have assumed it's us. And it might be us. I'm not saying that we are not meant to identify with the men in the two stories. I'm saying it's ambiguous. Parables are meant to make you ponder. So let's chew over these ones a little. Look at all the other parables in Matthew 13. To use a technical term that you would meet in drama or English as you analyse a story, who is the protagonist in the parables of Matthew 13? Each parable tells a story. Whose story is it telling? Who is it that's trying to achieve something? Whose project is the story following? Well, let's look, shall we? The parable of the sower. A farmer went out to sow his seed. Who is the farmer? In the first instance, it's God, or the Lord Jesus. Then comes the parable of the weeds and the wheat in 24 to 30. 24, the kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. Who is he? Verse 37. The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. It's Jesus. Last week we had two short parables. The parable of the mustard seed, which a man took and planted in his field. We're not each of us likened to individual mustard plants. It's not the parable of mustard and cress. It's the parable of the mustard seed. The kingdom of heaven, all down the ages, is likened to a single tree. Who planted that tree? Why? It's Jesus, of course. Then we have the small amount of yeast that a woman mixed into a great batch of dough. Now again, Jesus' kingdom around the world for 2,000 years and counting is like a single batch of dough. Who mixed the yeast in and kick-started the growth? Again, it's got to be Jesus. So, all the other parables in Matthew 13 are a story about what Jesus is doing. And one key principle in reading the Bible properly is to remember it's not first and foremost a story about us. It's a story about God and his plan. We fit into God's story, but it's his story, not ours. And that's true of Matthew 13. Jesus is building his kingdom by sowing his word. And we are invited to be a part of what he's doing. Which means that our first guess when we read these two parables should be that they are also about Jesus. Jesus sold all that he had and bought the field because he wanted the treasure more than anything else in all creation. Jesus saw a single pearl that set his heart alight. And he wanted that pearl more than anything, so he sold everything he had and he bought it. Which means that we are the treasure hidden in the field, and we are the pearl of great value. If you are a Christian, Jesus Christ looked at you and decided that he wanted you in his kingdom more than he had ever wanted anything. The only way he could have you was to give up everything he had. That was the price he would have to pay to buy you. And at this point we could turn to something like Philippians chapter 2, a famous passage. Jesus Christ, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. In Acts chapter 20, the apostle Paul addresses the leaders of the church in Ephesus. He tells them to be shepherds of the church of God, which he bought with his blood. Many things in life have a price tag on. I was in Homebase yesterday, and our youngest was intrigued to discover that you could buy baths and other items of bathroom furnishing, some of which were even more amusing than baths, for a price. 500 for this, 130 for that. Great fun. Everything has a price tag on. What's the price tag on the Christian? When Jesus Christ bought you, what did he buy you with? To buy that field, to buy that pearl, a massive sum of money was required. To buy you, the price Jesus paid was his own blood. That was the price tag, and he paid it joyfully. Matthew 13, verse 44, in his joy he went and sold all he had and bought that field. These two short parables tell the story of the whole Bible, the story of a God who wanted to rescue you so badly, who wanted to rescue me so badly, that he left the royal courts of heaven and lived on this earth as a humble human being, that he suffered a humiliating and painful death to pay for your sin and mine before taking you to live with him forever, ransomed, healed, restored, forgiven. Someone I know is sometimes asked to summarize the story of the Bible in one sentence, and his reply is this: kill the dragon, get the girl. That ancient dragon, the devil, deceives, spoils, and kills. And Jesus went out on a rescue mission. He inflicted a mortal wound on that dragon when he died on the cross. And so he rescued the girl, the bride he loves, his church, his people, you and me. We sing about this in our hymns. If you had enough of a church upbringing to know some old hymns, you might know The Church's One Foundation. From heaven he came and sought her to be his holy bride. With his own blood he bought her, and for her life he died. Or we sing, thou didst leave thy throne and thy kingly crown when thou camest to earth for me. I will sing the wondrous story of the Christ who died for me, how he left his home in glory for the cross of Calvary. Oh, who am I that for my sake my Lord should take frail flesh and die? These are not in the first place parables about what Jesus asks you to give up for him. They are parables about what he has given up for you. To ask someone to give something up would be madness. To ask someone to give up everything is insanity. Jesus' love for you drove him to an act of divine madness. Welcome to the love of the Lord Jesus Christ. The kingdom of heaven is like treasure hidden in a field. When a man found it, he hid it again, and then in his joy went and sold all he had and bought that field. Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant looking for fine pearls. When he found one of great value, he went away and sold everything he had and bought it. There's the first detail to notice in these parables, the ambiguity of the cast. The second detail to notice is the joy of the finder. The joy of the finder. And we've already touched on this. As I say, it's ambiguous about who the finder is. If it is about Jesus, it's also about us. This isn't a zero-sum game where, to the extent that it's about Jesus, it's not about us. It almost certainly is a case of both and. I say that because the theme of being willing to pay a price for being in Jesus' kingdom is one we've met before. In the parable of the sower, some seed fell on rocky ground, which stood for the fact that following Jesus doesn't make all of your problems disappear. In fact, sometimes they get worse, so that you pay a heavy price for choosing to be a follower of Jesus. You need deep roots if you're going to keep following him, even when, as he says, trouble or persecution comes because of the word. Some seed fell among thorns. The worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, choke the word, making it unfruitful. This was the person who prized their possessions, their family, their career, whatever it was, more highly than being a follower of Jesus. They had things they weren't willing to give up. So when Jesus tells these next two stories, we already know he's talking about us. Here are two people who saw something that was so wonderful they were transfixed. Their eyes lit up. They couldn't take their eyes off it. No matter what it cost, no price would be too much to pay. No matter how much they might have to suffer, no matter what they would have to give up, they just had to have it. That's the emotion, the dynamic, the mood of this story. It's not a story to beat ourselves up with, telling us to pay a price we don't really want to pay. The men in the stories had to give up everything, but it did not feel like a sacrifice. They'd get to have that treasure chest. They'd get to have that pearl. Nothing is too much to give up to have the treasure, the pearl of your dreams, the joy of the finder. I don't know why. I apologize for the resulting earworm, but as I was preparing this, the Proclaimers came to my mind. My Scottish accent is appalling, so excuse me for saying it rather than singing it. Perhaps you should have got the choir to do it for us. But you know the song. When I'm working, I know I'm going to be the man who's working hard for you. And when the money comes in for the work I'll do, I'll pass almost every penny on to you. When I come home, well, I know I'm going to be the man who comes back home to you. And if I grow old, well, I know I'm going to be the man who's growing old with you. But I would walk 500 miles, and I would walk 500 more just to be the man who walks 1,000 miles to fall down at your door. There's a girl he wants. He had walked from one end of the British Isles to the other and back if he could have her. He'd give up every penny to have her. Isn't a sacrifice? It's a joy. He's given up a lot, but it's a joy to do it. The joy of the finder. Maybe you read these parables and your reaction is the mechanic's sharp intake of breath. You find yourself thinking, sounds expensive. The solution is not to beat yourself up. The solution is not masochism. It's not grin and bear it. The solution is to look again at the Lord Jesus, to read his word, to look at him from every angle you can until you begin to see more and more of his beauty, until he becomes the one thing, the one person, the one God that you simply have to have in your life because you are so captivated by him. Who could want anything more than the opportunity to know the one who made the universe? To be called a child of God in his family, more loved than anyone could ever be. To be totally forgiven, perfect in the eyes of God. To have God's Spirit live within you so he's always near you. To change and transform you from within so he can pray when your words run out. To have a sure and certain future living with the Lord Jesus in a perfect and unspoiled world. to be attached to this Jesus, to know this Jesus, to see this Jesus, to live for this Jesus. What could possibly be better? Do you have anything in your life that is more precious than that? More precious than him? Surely not. See these two details in the parables, the ambiguity about who he's talking about. Who gives up everything? Not us, but Jesus. And the joy of the finder, his joy at finding you, your joy at the chance to know him. Those two details come together in Hebrews chapter 12. It would be a good chapter for anyone who's looking at what following Jesus might cost them and who is thinking it through. So here's Hebrews chapter 12, verse 4. In your struggle against sin, you've not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. Things could be a lot worse than they are. But here's the way to think about things. Hebrews 12, verses 1 to 3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart.